Hi, just a quick follow-up to your beautiful answer to question 1378, and unassumingly, one more question for the Rav. First, regarding the freedom of choice of a drunk driver and a person's ability to pray or live a pious life and somewhat deter a terrible fate, does the Rav have any understanding of how that intervention on the Bechira actually works? One way or another, someone's, either the driver, another driver, or the person themselves, Bechira, needs to be affected in some way. Second, does the Rav's account of the administration of the death penalty by the Beis Din, that the death penalty is not optional, hold true for all crimes warranting the death penalty, i.e. breaking Shabbos, homosexuality? Lastly, excuse the length, but I've been struggling with the timelessness of Judaism, or unfortunately what seems to be a lack of thereof. Meaning, as one learns through the Torah and the Gemara, especially Sanhedrin, it seems that the teachings are stuck in time warp, and at times a seemingly morally deprived one. This issue stems from things as benign as modern day's ambivalence to sacrifices as a meaningful tool of self-reflection, to some more potentially harmful teachings such as pedophilia being deemed not so bad if the child is below 9 or 3, actually echoed in the Torah as well, or it is okay to burn some types of books that contain opposing opinions. While the list could go on, if you could respond to at least these three ideas, the pedophilia being most pertinent, I would greatly appreciate it. Also, any general sentiments you may have to understand the similar things found in our religion's jurisprudence, like the Jewish kings having 1,000 wives, concubines, would be great as well. Josh Kahn from Miami. Okay, first of all, I don't know what the problem you have with people's free choice being deterred, because our free choice is not totally unlimited. People's choices are within certain parameters that they are born into, and even though a person has free choice is limited by everybody to certain parameters. And the Ribbono Shel Olam can make a person die, and then his free choice for sure is deterred, and just as much, sometimes the Ribbono Shel Olam takes away a person's free choice, either partially or fully. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't punish a person for what he had no choice over, only for what he does have choice. And therefore, if the Ribbono Shel Olam limits the choice of the driver or the person who's walking across the street or whatever, he's not punished for what the Ribbono Shel Olam limited his choice. He's punished or rewarded for what he has free choice within the limitations and parameters of that free choice. Also, the fact that the administration of the death penalty is a mitzvah on the Sanhedrin, if all of the conditions are there, meaning there were two kosher witnesses and the person was warned and he accepted the warning and he's found guilty by the right number of judges, then it's mandatory for the Sanhedrin to judge the case and to carry out the death penalty. And it applies to all death penalties. This concept that pedophilia is less of a problem with children, girls under 3 and boys under 9, is totally erroneous. The sin is still a sin. It's just that you don't get the death penalty because of the guidelines for what is considered an act of intimate relation doesn't apply to a girl under 3 or not capable of a boy under 9 doing that. But it's totally prohibited, and the person just doesn't get a death penalty for it. But it's totally prohibited. It doesn't make a difference in the prohibition. It's only in the fact that the one does not get a death penalty for that. And sometimes the reason you don't get a death penalty is not because it's less serious, because it's more serious, and the death penalty will not atone for something like that. So in any case, it's a technicality that you don't get the death penalty. It does not make the sin any less of gravity. And also, the timelessness of Torah. Torah transcends the fads of the generations. The fact that people don't see sacrifices as a meaningful tool of self-reflection is not because we have become much more refined. It's because we're not familiar with the spiritual world, and we're less refined when it comes to understanding the workings of the spiritual world or being in tune with the spiritual world. So the fact that people are not in tune with that is not a sign that the Torah is not relevant. The Torah's relevance does not depend on how people think. It's on what is absolutely honest. People have to create and mold their feelings according to the Torah, not the Torah being molded according to person's feelings. And the fact that Jewish kings could have, according to some poskim, only 18 wives. He could have concubines more. And the fact that anybody from the Torah could have more than one wife, it's only a Chirim Rabbeinu Gershom not to have more than one wife. The concept of a family where there are more than one wives, which our Avos had also, is something that if a person has the right intentions, he can have a family like that. That's a very fine Jewish family. Today it's prohibited basically because of Chirim Rabbeinu Gershom, at least by Ashkenazim. But with the wrong intentions, even having one wife can be problematic. So again, people's feelings and their attitudes should be shaped and molded by the Torah, and not that the Torah has to adapt to the feelings and attitudes of each and every generation and every place that may be built and molded and shaped by very foreign ideas.